Okay. Hey, Pam, we look good on the recording. You see us?
Mm-hmm, we good.
Okay, we good. Okay.
Yep.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's time. I'm really excited about this. First off, my name is Joe, and I'm of NWA Connie Corso, and we're gonna talk with some dog men, two guys I really respect from afar, and I just wanted to tell them that I appreciate them. First off, because a lot of guys you can't call up, or they act like they're too big to even talk to, you know, talk to you sometimes. So, and that definitely wasn't the case of them, and they're definitely just men of standard. And they're not gonna tell you what they believe, but they're gonna tell you what they know. So first off, we got Mr. Clyde Thomas of CT's Touch Horses and Dogs, and Mr. Drip Gypsy Stratton of Rock of Age Kennel.
And the Personal Protection Dog Association.
That's right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So I just want to start out by just asking you guys, could y'all give us a brief history of how you got into dog training and things like that? Starting with you, Mr. Gypsy.
Okay. First off, I'd like to say greeting, dog lovers, especially you men that I see here. I'm so glad that we're able to speak. I hope that we're able to bring something valuable to the public in our conversation. I started, my father, Jim Stratton, had a friend. His name was Lieutenant Earl Jones. And he was the first professional black dog trainer in Chicago. Had his own place. Had background in dog training, and my father is the breeder of his dog, Topar the Great. So that was in 1973 or 74. I was just a kid, but I loved dogs. I used to follow dogs in Prairie behind Funtown. If any of you guys know about Funtown in Chicago, it was a big prairie behind there. So I used to follow dogs, stay out there all night. And I was crazy about animals and dogs. And some of y'all are old enough to remember Wild Kingdom and all that kind of stuff. Well, I was addicted to all of that. Anyway, I tried to join the military because I wanted to train dogs in the military. And I passed all the tests except for the physical. So my dad took me to Earl Jones, and I apprenticed under Earl Jones for about a year. Maybe a year and a half. He put two books in my hand when I walked in the door. One was The Colder Method, and the other was The Animal Mind. So Earl was a real educator. He was a thinking man, and he taught his students to think about what they were doing because, we'll get into all that. But that's my how I got started. And that was a long time ago, 20 years ago or 25 years ago, we started the Personal Protection Dog Association. That was after we moved out of Chicago, out here to Moments, Illinois, to Rock of Ages Kennel. Okay. I guess that's enough. I can't wait to hear.
Okay, thank you, Gypsy.
Is that
Clyde? Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your background in dogs?
Yes, sir. Good evening, everybody. My name is Clyde Thompson. I'm 55 years of age. I'm not the I don't have all probably the experience that Mr. Stratton have and the knowledge that he have. It goes back to a kid when. I don't know if you guys remember, there was some TV shows, Run, Joe, Run. It was all about a jerk. Yeah. In 10. So, yes. So those was the shows that got me interested in German Shepherds. And as a kid, my grandmother was a was a dog lover. My grandmother had dogs. And I was real close with my grandmother because she liked outdoor stuff, and so did I. And my grandmother gave me my first one-eyed, floppy-eared German Shepherd. And man, it was the love of my life. And then, as like I said, as watching, same thing with as Gypsy said, I grew up watching Wild Kingdom. Wild Kingdom would come on 3 o'clock on Sunday. And as a kid, I leave the basketball game to go in and watch it at 3 o'clock. So I'm just kind of an animal lover. Always had a dog in my life. And then I just wanted to train my dog. I wanted my dog to be trained. So I somehow also, when I first started wanting to train protection dogs, the Kohler Book of Dog Training was the only book of dog training that I've actually sat down and read. I'm not a reader. I'm one of them guys. I like to look at the pictures and the illustrations. But I actually did a lot of reading in that book. And then I'm kind of blessed that I could see somebody doing something and know that I want to do that same thing, and I can figure out a way to get there. And then later on, as I was reading the Kohler Book of Dog Training, I realized, well, I was doing that, but I just didn't know what it was called. But I was doing that because I wanted the end result to be this. So I'm kind of a self-taught. I didn't have the luxury of training up under some real renowned dog trainers, kind of self-taught. I watch, I listen, I look, and I learn. And I've been blessed to teach. So I don't consider myself a professional or master, but I am good at what I do. And I tell people, man, I don't have the best. I'm not the best, but I'm far from the worst.
Okay. All right.
So we get started.
Right. Okay, cool. So we got kind of a direction to go or to get a good concrete foundation on what we're talking about. Gypsy, can you go over the different styles of, I'll say, protection dogs, like for is the guard dog, the watch dog, I guess you say attack dog. Gypsy, can you break all those down, okay, the differences?
Yes. First off, I got to go back to Mr. Thompson here. It was my grandmother also. And my mother, my auntie, and my godmother, all beautiful women, lived in the community, let's say, and did not have a man in the house. I can never remember any man coming there raising his voice to their houses or disrespecting them in any manner, and they never got broke in on. And the major reason for that, I believe, not only they were good people, but they had badass dogs, period. And this is before my father started training dogs. They never had a professional. They raised dogs, and that's why this book that my wife and I wrote is called The Owner's Guide to Raising Your Pet Protector. So let me start out with, I love dogs so much. I'm a sap. I hug them. I sing to them. I make up poems. I kiss them. My dogs love me so much, they will stop eating so that I can pet them. I have to tell them, go eat. And they were like, okay, I'll eat, but you got to hug me first. That's how much love I have for my animals. So you said the first word that Earl Jones told me to never use was attack dog. It is a misnomer. It is also, if you use it in a court of law, you can be in big trouble. So I love dogs. I love my first dog, other than my family's dogs, was the police demonstration. And I was fascinated by that. But I always had the question, if the gun is in this hand, why is the dog biting the other hand? Now, that was before I became a professional, before I knew anything, but I knew something was wrong with that picture. If the gun is over here, why is he biting over here? So I love tracking. I love dock diving. I love anything you can think of, agility. I love all that. But I love above all is the watchdog. And the watchdog, I would say, is a dog that's bred, even though back in those days, nobody knew anything about breeding. So if you heard that Miss Jane's dog was having puppies, and you've always admired how Miss Jane's dog told people how to keep it moving, you went and got one of those puppies. Nowadays, though, there are many dogs, even better dogs than there were in the past. They're bigger, they're more aggressive, they have bigger jaws and bigger teeth. They are more destructive or can be more lethal than in the past. And so because of those reasons, it have made me be alarmed, afraid for us as dog men, and especially for our profession as professional dog trainers. So the watchdog is my favorite of all, because the watchdog is usually protecting people. Not the guard dog. The guard, Earl used to tell me, if you want a guard dog, you might as well go get an alligator and put him in the yard. Because a guard dog is, by definition, is an indiscriminate biter. You want a watchdog who is your pet and your protector. And so the my biggest problem is, in this modern age, trainers, especially young trainers, teach prey and pursuit and apprehension. That's because most young trainers don't have a house. They don't pay insurance. And the only thing they know about court is Judge Judy. So they have less responsibilities most times than the people who they're training dogs for. The bus driver, the factory worker, the nurse, the teacher, normal people, not the baller. If you want to, we can get into that baller conversation, but I have a thing called the baller tax. So if you're a baller, you better not let me know about it, because I'm going to tax you hard. So my favorite client, of course, is the church lady. And that's because I was raised by all them church women that I mentioned earlier. She's not trying to hurt anybody. But if you violate her, she will call down wrath on your ass. Can I say that?
Can you talk freely? Yes, okay. Sir.
All right. She will call the angels upon you, and it won't be nothing nice. So I guess I'll wait and hear somebody else's response to that, and then I got more.
Okay, Clyde, it's on you, brother.
So I'll chime in and pick up with Mr. Gypsy and comment on some of the things that he said. And you know, I don't know a whole lot about Mr. Gypsy's background and training. For, you know, I'm really not a student of the game, man. A student of the game, he studies, he researches other people. Like I said, he reads, he follows. I hit and miss. I look here, I listen for a little bit, I see what somebody's talking about, and I move on. So I'll talk about my version of the watchdog and the guard dog and the family dog. So to me, like Mr. Gypsy said, and I think that some of the things that, you know, it's okay for us to agree and agree to disagree, you know, and that's where a lot of dog trainers have problems, is because all of a sudden when you disagree with something that they're doing or saying, then now they want to talk about you. They can't agree to disagree. To me, a guard dog is that, for that person that may live out somewhere or got a piece of property, and he just don't want no company. He just don't want people coming around. This dog, like Mr. Gypsy said, this dog is, he wants to eat up the world. Anybody that come in there, he's going to try to destroy them. He's barking if you walk by. The owner probably got to put that dog up and confine him once you do come in. To me, that's the guard dog. He's there to guard a property. He's guarding a space, and he don't want nothing to come in that space. My best dog is, to me, the family dog, the personal dog. My family, my personal dog, his job is to protect me and my family. If I leave the house and I leave him at the house, if he's in his yard, his fenced yard, anybody that approaches that fence, then he's supposed to alert. He's supposed to bark. He's supposed to defend it. He's supposed to protect it. If I'm in the house, he's supposed to do the same thing, and that alerts me, and that allows me to be able to fix the situation or whatever, peek out the window if it's somebody walking by. At least I'm aware of that. My dog made me aware of that. If I have my dog with me and something was to jump off, or if I get approached by some negative energy, some negative people, I can rely upon my dog to help me stop this situation from going any further. I can rely upon my dog to help defend me, help protect me, help fight if I have to, if it have to get to that point. So that's my family dog. That's my family dog is Mr. Stratton's watchdog. And I think that they're kind of similar. But at the same time, you got different levels of training that you do with these dogs. I say it's like mixed martial arts. In mixed martial arts, you got karate, you got taekwondo, you got all these different branches, but they're all mixed martial arts. Some of the training is similar, but the end result is different. So in this protection world, you got so many people that's training or advertising protection dogs just because that dog has bitten a sleeve, or just because that dog has will alert or will bark. Unlike Mr. Gypsy, I like to train my dogs in prey as well. Now, I don't rely upon prey, because for a family protection dog, I don't have to have prey. I don't have to have all the characteristics that a court person may need, but I still use prey in my training with my protection dogs. I'm gonna let Mr. Gypsy go back and let him speak on it some more, and then I'll come back and add to it and discuss. Because this is really, to me, this is Mr. Stratton. This is Gypsy's show. He is the man. He's got more credibility than I have, and I'm glad to be a part of this show, because I can listen and I can learn.
Hey, before we do that, Gypsy, yeah. I was going to wait on that, because it seems like y'all going to get into prey and defense. Can we go into something else before we go into that?
Wherever you want to go.
Okay. For now, both of y'all kind of already tapped in on this a little bit, but what are the specific things that you see that is being done, or what, let me get this straight. What things are wrong in the training that you guys see today? What things stick out that's like, you know?
Can I go first, Mr. Gypsy? Are you ready?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you what I see right off. I see so many dog trainers taking advantage of the general public. I see so many dog trainers selling families, selling individuals, selling sport dogs as home protection dogs, as personal protection dogs. I see so many guys like Mr. Gypsy spoke on earlier that's advertising themselves and doing training, and they really, they've seen a few aspects of what dog training is about. Now, all of a sudden, they're a dog trainer. I see so many trainers that can't train a dog if a dog doesn't have prey drive. I see so many trainers that can't train a dog that doesn't have natural food drive. Let me explain that. If you have to starve a dog down to make him work for food, that's not natural food drive. You develop, you condition this dog. You got this dog slaving for this kibble. You feed him his whole entire meal out of your hand because you've starved this dog down. So that's not natural. That's not, I wouldn't call that food drive. You condition that dog. You starve this dog. So yes, if you starve me, I'll work for some food too.
Yeah.
So many trainers cannot train dogs. That's the only way they know how to train a dog is if they have a toy in their hand, if they have a food bag on their belt.
That's right.
I believe that you should be able to, like, for example, my dogs. I don't even have to have a collar on my dog. I don't have to have a treat. I don't have to have a toy in my hand when I ask my dog to do something, in most cases, and sometimes I let my dogs be hard-headed, kind of like I let my kids this time. But when we train dogs, if we want our dogs to be sharp, we got to keep tuning on them. But back to what I was saying, you shouldn't have to have no tools in your hand in order for your dogs to do anything. And so many trainers, that's the only way they know how to train. And if you come with a dog that don't have those drives and those characteristics, they're going to tell you, we can't train your dog and try to get you to purchase maybe one of their dogs. So
let me talk.
Step back and let me.
Yeah, listen. When I train with my young trainers, I call them my deacons. Mm-hmm. When we do workshops and things, I'm always screaming, trainer brain, not agitator brain. The trainer is a scientist. He looks at the bigger picture. The agitator thinks he's some kind of gladiator. He is in it to see how close he can get, and which I've been there. He wants to defy danger. He wants people to go, ooh, ah. Now, believe me, I've heard lots of oohs and ahs over the course of my career.
Hey, when they almost got their face bit off, that's when they get that, ooh, I'm Mr. Stratton.
Yes, yes. See, I was taught the closer you get, the more chances you take, the better dog you make. Earl Jones taught me that and Plummer. But this thing with food. I remember watching Bozo Circus. I don't know if you guys remember Bozo Circus, but I was always fascinated by the poodles and the other tricks dogs. And then I found out that, wow, this is very similar to the guys who train seals. Mm. It is almost the exact same training regimen. I don't use food. I don't use pinch collars, and I don't use electricity. And I agree. I want my dog to cooperate with me. And if I raise him in that frame of mind, then in most cases, he's going to be able to adjust. So let me get to this. So yes, food, no. The only time that I even would allow any of my clients to use food is in a recall. And I tell them that's only because it is so important. I will tell them, get down on your knees, beg him to not run into the street if that's what it takes. And so, yes, I will allow them at some point to use food on recall, but it is not anything that I bring into the picture. There are two things that a dog must learn. The most important thing that a dog can learn is the word no. No means stop doing what you're doing right now. The next most important thing is come to me. Not their name, not I love you, not how beautiful you are, not get them. It's no and come here. Those are the two most important things that a dog can learn. Now, I'm going to go back to this agitator brain versus trainer brain. And something that you said, Clyde, when you said, if the dog doesn't come already equipped with these particular drives, we can't train them. You cannot tell the church lady to get rid of her dog. That is a sin. Church lady love her dog. You've got to do everything you can to get something from this dog that will help this church lady. And then maybe you talk her into buying a puppy, another dog to go along with her dog, but you can't tell the church lady, let's get rid of the dog she loved. That's a part of her family.
You got to be artistic about it. Like you said, you can't
You can't. It's a sin. It's wrong. And if you can't train them, that means you're not a professional trainer. Now, let me go to something that's real important that I know, and y'all are going to recognize this. It's called the defensive protocol. The defensive protocol started long before anybody started trying to train dogs. Elephants do it. Wolves do it. Groundhogs do it. Squirrels do it. Every animal that lives in a community has the defensive protocol. Defensive protocol is alarm. Hey, somebody is in our area and we don't like it. So the alarm could bring about the flight response. Everybody run, get in your hole, hide. Or it will bring the defensive. Oh, sorry, y'all. Okay. Where is he? There he is. So it's alarm first. Next comes challenge. If the guy is at the front door, don't run to the back door. Challenge means go to where he is. Alarm challenge, then comes threat display. The growl, the teeth, the body language, the posture, that is a warning to this intruder that you're in the wrong place and you're about to find out that fat meat is greasy. Then comes contact, alarm, challenge, threat display, engagement. That can happen over the course of seconds, moments, or even minutes. So that's what I instruct my students to. So let me go here. So here's my biggest problem with so-called trainers who are either agitators or decoys. I would not allow you to call me a decoy. It's an insult to me. I am an agitator. I'm a bad guy. I am a problem. And I am going to teach your dog how to solve that problem. But here's the biggest problem in our industry. And I have to lay it at the feet of prey. The bite. The bite is what's going to get you in court. It's going to harm individuals. And when it comes to harming or killing a human being, there are three reasons. A dog is either defending himself, defending his master, or defending his master's abode, his cave, his hut, his car, even when he's in it. Those are the only three moral and legal justifications for harming, even to the point of killing, another human being. Prey is what the police use, prey and apprehension. It has its place, but the police have an advantage in the legal world. It's called qualified immunity. Qualified immunity means that the police can violate your rights and it don't even come to court because they have in place qualified immunity. They also have an unlimited amount of money and team of lawyers to protect the police when they are wrong. Church lady doesn't have qualified immunity. Here's what the church lady has when it comes to legal. Self-defense, period. That's it. If it ain't about her self-defense, she's in trouble. The other thing about prey is, why are they biting? What alarms me, I put so many likes and hearts on all these young people because I want to respect the work. See, the only thing that beats talking is working. I don't care how much you can talk. If you ain't trained no dog, you haven't trained but one dog, then, you know, tell that to somebody else. Talk to somebody else about that. If you haven't trained but 5 or 10 years and you've only trained 1 or 5 dogs, then you still don't know what you're talking about. Oh boy, I lost my thought here. I'm so old. But
take your time.
Yeah, that's all right.
My wife don't like that. But pray. What alarms me most is I see puppies being taught to chase and bite and hold before they know, don't shit in my house. Don't eat my alligator shoes. They don't even know their name yet. And the crime of that is that these guys will have this litter of dogs, 6, 8 weeks old, 10 weeks old, that is already being taught to chase and bite. And then they sell it to the church lady or to the cab driver or the bus driver or the factory worker, somebody whose life is not revolving around the dog like our lives do. And that dog comes to their house as a puppy, versed in chasing and biting and holding. And so what I have found out is that most of these guys never use the word no because they don't want to interfere with this drive, this prey drive, this bite drive. That is a sin. Go ahead.
Mr. Gypsy, let me ask you something right quick. So
yeah,
I guess you're saying that the prey drive is more so used by police officers, being that those dogs are like dogs you use to deploy on people. Versus your style, which
my style is prevention.
Okay.
Prevention is superior to apprehension. If my dog makes you change your mind, we don't have to apprehend you. You're going to change your mind and you're going to move along. That's the job of the watchdog or the personal protection dog, in my opinion.
Okay.
It is not based on you going to become part of the militia, or you heard somebody escape from somewhere and now you're going to go volunteer. That's what prey and apprehension is about.
Okay.
So here's my problem. I always ask, why do we train? That's important. That's a very important question. So there are so many guys who say they're training sport. They're hiding behind the word sport, where they are literally the Dangerous Dog Act wherever you live. animal control has a thing called the dangerous dog category. How do you get in that category? You get there from biting. That's how you get there. And so once your dog has been categorized as a dangerous animal, now you are in line for some liability. You may get your dog taken from you, but if you keep it and it bites someone else, it's on record as being a dangerous dog. So when you teach a pup to chase and bite for no reason, you're tapping into the chase genetic, the prey genetic, but there is no reason for it. And then you train that dog, enhancing this bite drive. It's already dangerous before it has bitten anyone. Okay. There's going to be a day when trainers are going or should be on a list, a registry, where this is the registry of professional dog trainers in good standing. The way you stay in good standing is you show up, you do the work, and you test. You have to have a minimum test for a professional level.
Okay.
That doesn't exist.
All right.
The way they think they get there is the show, the sport. Again, that is a word that they're hiding behind, sport. Because if they train 100 dogs, only 3 or 4 of them ever make it to a sport field.
Hey, Dwayne Newton, mute yourself, sir. Dwayne Newton, please mute yourself. Sorry, Gypsy.
Go ahead. That means that out of 100 dogs, if only 3 make it to the sport field, they're probably not going to win, but they made it there. There's 97 other dogs that are what you call half-baked. They've already been taught to chase and bite and hold devastating bites. It seems as if so-called trainers who are actually agitators and or decoys, you see them rolling around on the ground. They'll pick a dog up. This is why the dog's biting. Pick them up, press them into the wall, all of this. And the dog never lets go. And the worst sin of all is when you see the bad guy petting or rubbing the head of my dog.
Yeah, you're
don't agitated. Do that.
Yeah, you're agitated. Yeah, okay.
Yes. Uh-huh. How are you gonna be the bad guy and you're rubbing my dog? Oh, it makes him calm in the bite.
Right.
You
right.
know, that is ridiculous.
Oh yeah, yeah. Anyway, Clyde, you want to chime in? Gypsy, are you finished?
I'm sorry. Go ahead. No. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
So yeah, let me elaborate on some of the things that Mr. Gypsy said. You know, so again, my field or my line of training in most cases is the family dog. And so many people and so many trainers, even when it comes not just to the protection work, but just the obedience. In the family dog, I don't need my dog doing a focus heel.
No.
Walk 12 blocks through the neighborhood. I don't need my dog looking up in my eye, walking on his toes while I'm walking, while I got him in a heel, walking to the park. To me, that's kind of like a ballerina. You know, she dance on her toes and when she's performing, but when she's at home or in the neighborhood, in the grocery store, she's not walking on her toes. So many trainers.
That's right.
That's the only obedience they know how to train. It's show stuff. It's for the showroom. It's for the show floor. So again, I'm a family dog. I'm more practical. When we talk about the protection, so many people that feel right off the bat when they get a puppy, I don't want nobody rubbing my puppy. I don't want nobody touching my puppy. When I get a puppy, I want everybody rubbing my puppy. I want everybody loving on my puppy. And I'm teaching 2 things that Mr. Gypsy said, and that's teaching my dog to come to me when I call him, and I teach my dogs what no means. And I tell people, no is a word, no and okay and here. Those are the 3 words that I teach my dogs from the very beginning. And no I don't care what language you speak, what country you in. People knows what no mean. There's no situation that no can't fit. Same thing with okay. I don't care what you speak, where you at. If you say okay, people know what you're talking about. Right. When I ask my dog to come here, I want my dog to come. So those are the three commands that I could control damn near any situation with my dog. A lot of times people ask me, do your dog chase cats? Well, and I'll tell them, yes, if I allow them, because most dogs, they chase cats unless they've just been growed up in the house with them and things like that. And most of my dogs are I'm not a cat lover. I don't even want cats walking on the property. So if I allow my dog to chase that cat, yes, he will. But okay. If I tell my dog no, that cat is as safe as he can be. So those are a few of the things that you need to have in any dog. I don't care if it's just a good family pet. Now back to the agitator and the decoy and personal protection dogs and sport dogs. There's a different risk involved when you're making what I call a real protection dog. And that's a dog that you can use and you can get him to alert, to bark, to attack. And there don't have to be no equipment. There don't have to be no setup scene, no setup scenario. The moves are not choreographed. So, to make that kind of dog, you have to have a good agitator. Or, let me back up. Sometimes, I used to have a bloodline of dogs that these dogs were so high strung, high driven, high defense.
Hot.
All I needed was a body. You didn't have to. If you could just stand in front of these dogs too long, they wanted to get you.
That's right.
So I was selling that dog as family companion dogs, and these dogs was way too hot for the average 9-to-5 man that don't have the experience that me or Mr. Gypsy have with dogs. These dogs would, if you challenge those dogs would challenge you back. And if you didn't put that dog in his place as a puppy, he's going to be running your house by the time he's 6-7 months. So I had to take a lot of that hotness out of those dogs because most of my clientele were people that had 9-to-5 jobs. They wanted a family dog first. So those people couldn't handle those type of dogs. So I had to take the drive. I had to come up with a genetic balance to where my puppies are not so fearless, not so hot. They have some insecurities, but yet they're not so insecure that they're going to go hide when somebody come up. Mm-hmm. So, people doing bite work with puppies.
Yeah, Clyde. That was my next question. I wanted y'all to go back into this bite thing. Y'all are answering questions before I can get to them, but this bite thing.
So
when you see a guy that has a sleeve and he's using the sleeve to bite, they take the sleeve off, the dog run off with the sleeve. Is that a telltale sign that the dog would not attack that man, but he's addicted to the sleeve?
So that just shows that these trainers, they're watching videos or they're sport dog trainers. Because in sport dog, for example, let's talk about Schutzen. A good Schutzen dog, to be a good Schutzen dog, he has to be very high prey. And he needs to be crazy about that sleeve. Because when you go to get scores, it's all about that sleeve. So if you're making a Schutzen dog, that's what you want. Yeah, you want him to take that sleeve, and when the man slip it, you want him to pack that sleeve off and possess that sleeve, because you're teaching him to possess, to want, to hunt, to look, to get that sleeve, because that's what gets you the scores in Schützen. Now, so many people are trying to, so many trainers are selling Schützen dogs for personal protection dogs. Totally different. Because you don't want a personal, if my personal protection dog bites your arm off, don't pack it down the street or around the corner or over there shaking on the arm and playing with the arm. That arm is no good to you anymore. So spit that arm out, because that man got another arm. And if that man is still in our presence, he could still do harm to us. So you have to let that arm go and be ready to protect, defend the man. So, I hope that answered your question.
Okay. Mr. Gypsy, can you go on in on that sleeve work?
I got something on that. I do not teach dogs to bite. Look at them dogs, man, that you got. What do they call?
Corsos.
You got association. Man, please. Look at that head. Look at all the muscle around that jaw. You think they put two dogs, I don't care if they mutts, put two dogs in the yard, they will be biting on each other. You can watch your clock. And as soon as they have a bone of contention, where you peeing on my tree, or that's my toy, or I want that old squirrel body, they will put their mouth on each other. That's what dogs do. They didn't come here with all that jaw and nothing wired in their brain to teach them how to express themselves with that jaw. Now, yes, prey animals have a jaw. They have canines. no matter what the animal is, and the mouth is useful for that, for capturing game so that they can eat. That mouth is also useful in defending the pack. Defending the pack. They don't defend the pack with their tails. They defend the pack with that mouth. I think I missed Mr. Johnson, Mr. Thompson. I don't see him no more.
Yeah, he just moved.
Okay, there you go.
If you see me do that, I just went to the bathroom or something.
Trying to figure out how would I do that. So I do not teach dogs how to bite. My father used to say, he don't care if you look like you've been, he wants you to look like you've been in a gang fight. He wants you to be on top of your head, under your arm, and the bottom of your feet. He don't care where his dog bites you, because if he bites you, he wants him to bite you hard. If it's just one bite, bite him hard. So I teach dogs why to bite and when to bite. The when to bite also is when not to bite. So in this prey, and I'm going to get back to your sleeve, in this prey, it is all about the bite. They don't even want to use the word no in the training, because they think it will take away from the dedication of the bite. So you can go look at 100. I like to use 100 because it's easy for me to mathematically give you an idea. You can go look at 100 videos of so-called trainers, and you may see out of 100, 3 or 4 or 5 may show you them telling their dog to come out of that bite. And in most cases, they're going to have to choke their dog out of that bite, or shock their dog out of that bite, or pinch their dog out of that bite. That's where the word no come in. Hey, get out of there. Get out of that, dog. Let it go. Come to me. You mentioned Schützen. I have a lot of respect for Schützen because they keep good records. Most sports now are based, it's a watered down version of Schützen. So I have to give them some props.
I'm totally afraid.
But it is nothing that I want, huh?
Yeah, he said he totally agree.
Yes. Mm. So I don't care about a show. There's only one show I care about. That's the Showdown. That's the only one I gotta win. I don't gotta win a trophy. I want my dog to change your mind. You may not know it, but if you got a real dog, he's having 10, 20 showdowns a day, depending on where you live and who's walking by your house. It's the Showdown you have to win. It's not the show. The other thing is there is no out.
Hey, Gypsy, would you unmute yourself? There, wait a minute.
How about that?
There you go. All right.
Did you get to the Showdown? You heard that?
Yeah, part? Yeah, we heard the Showdown. Yes, sir.
Okay. That's the only show that matters. And if my dog can change your mind, then he don't have to bite you. That's a win. Again, if you don't believe fat meat is greasy, walk on in. And you'll find out. So about this sleeve, when a dog bites a sleeve, if I slip that sleeve, I'm coming to get that dog. Because Earl Jones used to tell us, man, because some of y'all might remember back in the day, a guy might take his hat off and give his hat to a dog, or a dog bite him and he slips his jacket off, and the dog got to let go of an inanimate object, something that cannot harm us, something that has no real value when it comes to defending us. He got to let it go and come back to the man. So a real personal protection trainer is going to teach that dog, that sleeve is nothing. I'm the problem. Deal with me. So that's my answer to that slip in the sleeve thing.
Okay.
I think it's totally ridiculous, and it has no place in protection.
So if that's ridiculous to you, if that's ridiculous to you, I guess the owner of a protection dog doing protection work and letting the dog bite him would be silly as that. Yeah.
A sin. That is a sin. I tell my people, they come to get my dog, never play tug of war with this dog. Oh, well, God, I see that on the internet. It's a game. It's playing. Why? I said, well, this is the same dog that you're going to depend on to get Freddy out of your video. See, I didn't grow up on Disney. I grew up on Elm Street. With Freddy Krueger. Y'all know about Elm Street.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not Disney. Freddy Krueger. He gets you when you're asleep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, alarm, challenge, threat display, engagement. That is the defensive protocol. I don't care what animal you're talking about, all the way down to dolphins.
Okay.
Don't train your dog.
Right.
Don't teach your dog that it is okay to oppose you with its weapon.
Its mouth.
And when you do all that, that's right. When you do all that tug of war, that's what you're doing. And the worst, stupidest thing in the world is to put a sleeve on your arm. Now, please, y'all, don't get mad at me. If you do it, don't say you do it. Just don't do it no more. To have your dog bite you, even when you playing tug of war, you didn't notice that dog start growling at some point. You didn't notice that it starts thrashing its head back and forth as it growled at some point. You didn't notice that it was coming up the toy or the sleeve or whatever you had playing tug of war closer and closer to your hand. Until you let go and it says to itself, oh my God, Massa is scared of this mouth. And at the same time, you're training that dog to stand in the gap for you against a bad guy? No, never catch your own dog. I'm so strict. Don't even play tug of war. Mm. When I put my hand on it, let it go.
Mm-hmm.
That's the rule. My hand on it, dog. Go ahead.
So what I want to touch on is me and Mr. Stratton is Gypsy. We're so alike, but then again, there is some differences. So now I do, again, I like to train my protection dogs in some prey. I want them to be able to chase or to send out. It could be a situation at my house where a person is on my property. He's threatening me and my dog, and he's running to a spot in my yard to grab something to hurt me and my dog. So at that point in time, I want to be able to send my dog to get him, to prevent him from picking up that pipe, from picking up that shovel to attack me and him. So that's why I use prey in my training. Now with my puppies, I don't do bite work with my puppies, but I do play tug of war with my puppies. And when I play tug and I'm letting my puppies chase, what I'm doing is I'm preparing them and building the chase. But when I'm talking to, or when I'm playing with them in tug of war, I'm not talking to my dog. I'm not encouraging my dog, and I'm not telling him to get him and things like that. I'm just letting the puppy play. When I'm doing tug of war, everything is in play. And then I'll start building my puppy up. I may kick him. I may hit him. And then I'll let him have it. But at the same time, with my puppies, I'm already inserting some control. I'm inserting the word no. I'm inserting the word leave it. So when you see me on my videos and I've got my puppy chasing a rag, you won't hear me telling that puppy to get it. You won't hear me saying too much of anything. I'm just letting my puppy play. So I'm doing it all in play. Now, something else Mr. Stratton said. Now, when I speak on, like when I spoke on Schutzen, I'm not speaking against Schutzen. All I'm saying is, if you're making Schutzen dogs, sell them as Schutzen dogs. Don't sell them as home protection dogs. If you got a PSA dog, sell him as a PSA dog. Don't sell him as a Schutzen dog. So in Schutzen, it's okay for that Schutzen trainer to work his dog with the sleeve, because again, Schutzen is all about the sleeve. It don't matter who has it on. Go get the sleeve. Everything is about that sleeve when it comes to bite work in Schutzen. Now, the thing that I do like about Schutzen is that they do a lot of obedience. They in order to score well in Schutzen, you can't just score well in bite work and have a great Schutzen dog. You got to do obedience. You have to do tracking. So it's not just about bite work, but so many people, they want to get tied up into the bite work part of it. And like Mr. Stratton said, most dogs, they got teeth. They will bite. They know how to bite. So get your puppy some control. There's a big trainer out there. He sells puppies, and he's got these puppies attacking people. And I'm not going to call his name. He may be listening.
Good.
But I tell people a lot of times, he's setting himself up, and he's setting his clients up, and he's setting those puppies up for failure. Because most of those puppies are probably going to a family home. And if
Thank
your
you.
Little three-year-old puppy come out trying to attack me, he can't beat me. he's gonna get himself hurt, and he's gonna get himself put in a situation. Or if he go chases this little 5-year-old little girl that's just running to get her, she's running to get
that's
her ball, and that puppy's been built up in so much prey drive, he just wants to chase whatever's running and moving.
Yeah.
A good dog with prey drive, he'll chase a leaf across the yard.
Yeah,
that's right.
It don't have to be anything that moves, he wants to chase it. So again, I do family protection, family dog, family training. My stuff is practical to family around the house. So when I speak up on these sport trainers, I'm not demeaning them. I'm not trying to belittle them, but I'm saying stick with your sport. Quit selling your sport dogs for family companion, family protection dogs.
Right.